May it please the court, my name again is David Love and I represent the Laders, the Youngs, in this matter. As this court is well aware, this case arises out of a very tragic incident involving the death of Dr. Shaw, who was killed by a fellow hunter, Mr. Hartnagel, while hunting on the property of my clients, the Youngs. There are no facts in dispute in this particular case as far as what happened in the underlying case. The only issue then before this court is whether Missouri's recreational use statute or act would forbid the Shaw family from proceeding in a lawsuit against my clients, the Youngs, in this case for injuries or the death of Dr. Shaw. I would initially say to this court, and as this court is aware, the statute is not very old. It was enacted back in 1983 by our legislature, and there probably are only five or six cases that our appellate courts and this court have reviewed this particular statute. But I would implore this court that it only need to look to the statute itself, which makes it absolutely crystal clear that under the facts of this case, the Shaw family cannot bring a lawsuit against the Youngs, the property owners where this unfortunate accident happened, for the death of Dr. Shaw. This court, unless my research is incorrect, has addressed the recreational use statute only once, and it was very recently. It was in the recent case of Foster versus St. Louis County. I won't go into it because really the legal issue was an equal protection case, and it was not really addressing the merits of the case that we have before us today. But I think what is important about the Foster case is that this court has reiterated what all of the appellate courts that have addressed the recreational use statute has said is that the clear purpose of this act is to encourage the free use of land for recreational purposes to preserve and utilize this state's natural resources. That is the clear intent of the Missouri legislature when they enacted the recreational use statute to provide protection to landowners who, free of charge, allow others to come onto their land to hunt, to fish, to hike, bike, do nature studies, whatever it may be. And that was the clear holding of this court just last year. I believe that our legislature, if you just read the act itself, which is at 537.346 and continuing on to 347, did its absolute very best to try to think of each and every situation that it could, that someone could sue a landowner for an unfortunate accident like we have here, to make it clear that our legislature does not want landowners sued when they allow free access to their land.
Well, why didn't the legislature use the words like invited persons or public? Why did they just use the word public?
Well, and that's a good question, Your Honor. And I think they do, because they say in 537.347 that specifically that anybody that is allowed onto an owner's property does not have the status of an invitee. And right there it says you are not an invitee, and we all know under our law what the word invitee means.
Does the statute use the word public?
The statute, I do not believe, actually uses the word.
It uses any person. That's a more expansive term than public.
Your Honor.
Isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's your answer?
That is the answer. But I think what we're referring to is there is a case, the Lonergan case, that uses in dicta the word public, not general public, but just the public. And from that, the respondent is taking the argument that this means that in order for this statute to apply, my clients, the Youngs, would have had to have allowed everybody in the world, practically, or at least everybody in this state or in this country, to use their land in order for this statute to apply. And I would implore to this court that argument simply doesn't make any sense and really defeats the purpose of the statute to begin with.
But they also argue that on the flip side, if it doesn't mean the public, if it means
there's no liability to anybody, then someone who you invited on for a party or to swim in your pool or whatever could never sue. You really sort of get rid of invitee status.
For
all visitors to property.
And that, I don't think that is correct, Your Honor. You get rid of invitee status in certain circumstances. And if you look at the statute, and I don't discuss this entirely in my brief, it's not an issue, but you know, the statute does go on to say when it does not apply, and you raise the issue of a swimming pool. And if you look further in the recreational use statutes, it specifically says it doesn't apply to a situation where someone is in a swimming pool. It also goes on to say that it doesn't apply for all practical purposes to commercial land. And it doesn't apply to residential areas. And it defines residential areas as some place that is used for residential purposes that is a acre or less. So it does not completely just do away with the status of invitee and say anytime anyone comes on as a social guest, you can never sue the landlord.
I think you also drew a distinction in your brief between someone who was invited versus someone who asked for permission. Is that...
I don't think that is a very big distinction, Your Honor, because, again, when we talk about the invitee issue, it's right there in the statute. It goes on, there's no duty to warn, there's no duty to do anything, no duty to extend any assurance that the premises are safe. So it applies to anyone that we grant permission or anyone that a landowner would grant permission to use as long as the other elements are satisfied, which is obviously... the issue of free of charge, that they're not being charged in any way to use the land. And that's what we have here. That is not disputed, that this was not a situation where the decedent was charged to be there, nor was Mr. Hartnagle. So as long as the four elements are met, and I believe it is clear that the four elements are met, then there is no question that the Recreational Use Act applies here. Now, the other argument, if I read the respondent's position correctly, the other argument that they argue is that the Act doesn't apply in situations what they would term as, I guess, active negligence. In other words, that the Act only applies if there is a concrete physical defect on the premises. So, an old well, you know, with some sort of, you know, hole in the ground. Well, that is not the case. And if you look to the case, again, to the Loniker case, where then UE, now Ameren, was sued as the Lake of the Ozarks, owner of Lake of the Ozarks, the allegations against the electric company who owned the lake was not, you know, and it was a boat dock that the decedents ran into in the Loniker case. It was not a case of passive negligence. They were not suing Ameren for the defect itself, but yet they were suing Ameren for not following procedures, not making sure that the dock was properly permitted, et cetera, et cetera. Those are allegations of active negligence.
We got rid of the concept of active and passive negligence decades ago, too, didn't we?
Yes, you did, Your Honor, but I don't know how else to phrase it. But that is, I believe, the argument that they're trying to make in their... response to our motion to dismiss, that since the allegations are one of failure to warn, which again is specifically provided by the statute that there is no duty to warn, either generally or specific, but that since it is an issue of failure to warn and not something like an old well on our farm, that this act somehow doesn't apply.
Why was the word activity left out of Missouri's statute when it adopted it? Something similar to the Model Act?
And that's a very good question, Your Honor, one that I simply don't know the answer. If you look, we tried to do a relatively thorough job of looking at what other states are doing this with these acts, and as you know, just about every state in the nation now has one. And although most of these acts are similar, they are not identical. And some use the term activity, some use the term general public. There are slight differences between the two. But if you look at, again, I point to the Lonergan case, it talks about activities. When the Western District was looked at this issue and they went on and they're holding that the electric company was not subject to a lawsuit and was protected by the Act, it said the Act was specifically meant to protect lake owners against water activities and other water sports and pleasures associated with a lake. And it specifically uses the word activities. And I would suggest to this court All you have to do is substitute lake owner for landowner and water activities for hunting, and we have the exact same case. And I do want to just mention, if you want to talk about legislative intent, is that we're also aware the recreation, the term recreational use is defined by the statute, and the very first activity mentioned in the definition of recreational use is what? Hunting. So it's clear that the legislature wanted to protect landowners in situations like this, as unfortunate as this accident may have been, to protect the landowners who allow people like the Hartnagels and the Shaws, or to protect the Youngs from the hunters that they allow to use their land. So I don't think that there's any meritorious argument that would allow the plaintiffs in this case to get around the Act. I believe that the Act is clearly meant to protect people like my clients, the Youngs, who free of charge allow people to use their land for recreational purposes, and that this court should make its mandamus permanent in issue an order not allowing this case to be dismissed or making this case to be dismissed.
Thank you, counsel. Respond it.
Please report. This is a case that involves three principal issues. Mr. Bubba has talked to you about two of those. I think it's equally important that we talk first of all about the first of those two issues, and that is a procedural matter, or to another degree, a policy matter for this court. That's because this is, after all, a proceeding in mandamus, and it's not an appeal based on the merits. It's an interim action to determine whether the plaintiff gets to go to trial or not. The black letter law appears to be simple. Mandamus may not be used as a means of declaring law as applied to a given set of facts, but it may be used solely to implement the law. I think it bears well for us to consider whether there is such a clear statement of law as applies to the recreational use statute as to foreclose any suit such as that brought by the Shaws. If there's any doubt about the status of the law, we should not be able to use mandamus to clarify or to make certain what the law is. It should be reserved to execute the law and not to decide it. And I think Mr. Budd wouldn't be forced to jump in so many directions in trying to define what is acceptable to the law and what is not if it were in fact crystal clear. The inability to articulate a cohesive theory that reconciles the case law references to opening one's land to the public comes out of the fact that it's a relatively new statute, as Mr. Budd has observed. It has not been thoroughly fleshed out by this court and not disclosed by the Court of Appeals. The only case we really have for guidance is the Lanigan case, which does say that the purpose of the recreational use statute is to encourage the private land to be used essentially as public land for purposes of recreation.
Is it your position you have to open up land to the whole public? Or
I think
not necessarily at one time, but you have to allow members of the public at large to enter the land in order to be under the statute?
I think that's the clear implication from Lonergan.
Why doesn't the statute itself say open to the public? Why does it say any person then? It doesn't say you have to open it up to the public, but that's what we have to look at. And if that was their intent, why didn't they use those words?
I don't think there's another intent, pro or con, on that, Your Honor. As Lonergan observed, as the Court of Appeals observed in Lonergan, there's not a detailed legislative history for the Act available to the courts. At least they didn't mention one.
There never is in Missouri, so we always need to just look at the words of the statute.
Right, and they looked at the statute, and they looked at the development of the law, of similar laws in other states, and found that a key ingredient of those laws, and one that would be consistent with their observed or with their deduced assumption as to the purpose of the Missouri Act, was that it be open up to the public. But it's not the respondent's position that it has to be open to the entire public, but simply as to members of the public as opposed to individuals who are chosen by the landowner for essentially a private purpose.
So is there evidence here that, or was it alleged here that the owner of the land was a friend of Dr. Shaw's and said, come over and help with me? Or what is the factual situation here?
It's simply alleged that the owner issued invitations to two people to come hunt on his land. And I think the allegation further is that they were known to one another at the time that invitation was made. I don't see the difference between inviting two specific people to come hunt on one's land and allowing the same two people who may ask first if they can come on the land and hunt. I think it's the same thing, and they do not represent the public so much as...
So how many people would you have to ask? Or you'd have to say anybody who wants to apply can hunt? What is the practical matter are you saying we should have as a rule?
Well, Judge, I think you look to a case that was decided by this court in 2001 that I believe you wrote an opinion in, J.B. Vending versus Department of Revenue. It may involve a similar issue of what the public was in the context of the cafeterias selling to a closed audience, where the only people who were eligible to enter that cafeteria were employees of the building in which the cafeteria was located. And as you know, this court found that it need not be open to the public at large, but simply to people who chose to show up there, who met the first criteria of working for the company. They were a subset of the of the public, but they were not individuals admitted for their own, or just because of who they were. They were admitted because of the status of themselves as part of a group. And I think one can also look at the definition from dictionaries as to what the public means. It's the body politic, or the aggregate of the citizens of the state, municipality, or some other logical group. The discerned purpose of the statute is to benefit the public, and incidentally, as a means of encouraging private landowners to open their land to the public, they were given this limited immunity. But the immunity is clearly being intended, in the eyes of the lottery board, to be limited to persons whose land will benefit more than the personal retinue of an owner, but give the rights to members of the public, which I think is some concept beyond simply being a social acquaintance. If I went there and asked to hunt, I have no expectation under the pleaded fact of this case to assume that I would be admitted. I think it would be true of anyone.
Is any of this in the statute, though?
It's not in the statute, but I think it's a clear implication from the lottery case, which interpreted the statute, and it's the only guidance we have.
But we need to look and see if that was right. To the extent it says that, I mean, we have to look at the statute, not the case. It helps us if its reasoning is helpful. Well, of course, that's helpful to us in interpreting the statute. But it can extend the statute beyond what it says. So why is that a reasonable interpretation of the statute?
I think it brings back to my first point that this is a procedural matter of whether mandamus is proper and whether it's appropriate to make and declare the law in mandamus suit, as opposed to having a better record upon which to base findings that would result in declaring the law to be one thing or the other. Either it requires being open to the public, or whether it extends the immunity to somebody who simply asks his best friend to come over and hunt with him. I think there has been a clear historical difference between those two situations, and I think it would be a bad matter of policy for this court to change the rules on mandamus and change the rule and change the apparent interpretation of the lottery case all in one fell swoop. I think there are better ways to approach it, and the better way would be to base a decision upon a full record after development of trial and bring the people in if necessary to litigate the issue of legislative intent. I can't go into a discourse on what all that would require, because I think that's beyond the scope of this hearing. I also think it's beyond the scope of the pleadings. I think it's also pertinent that cases from other states have held similar to what we advocate, and that is that there must be some benefit to the public as a whole for the recreational use statute to apply and to grant the limited immunity. And the best way to measure that is by involvement of the public in the activity that's permitted on the land. The other The third issue, aside from mandamus and the public, open to the public requirement or non-requirement, is the actual literal language used in the statute itself. And the duty that's waived or that's given immunity is that of, is limited to the condition of the land itself, which is all written, in my view, as in terms of the physical condition of the land.
What does the language in 537.347, subsection 4, says that the landowner doesn't assume responsibility for any damage or injury to any other person or property caused by an act or omission of such person? How does that restrict the application of the statute to only conditions of the land?
Personally, I don't think that section says what the legislature is supposed to say, because the antecedent of such person likely can only refer to the same person who's been involved in the land.
You know, I think 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all under the introductory paragraph of the statute, and they talk about the person who's been permitted to be on the land, and then a number of the subsections refer to such person. Doesn't it indicate that that's the person they're talking about? They're comparing the person, one person with other invitees or other?
If that's the case, you've got two people being referred to by the same noun or pronoun.
I think they use other person and such person to distinguish the two.
Well, I think that may be true, but again, I think it's a matter that should be developed after hearing on that issue and not by the court in isolation guessing what the legislative intent was by...
Well, you don't have to guess too much from this. The way the statute's written, you don't have to guess very far to find out what the intent of the statute is. It's to excuse liability for landowners who have people in their land doing these kind of things.
I think that was probably the intent, Your Honor, but I have some concern about whether the literal language means that if you read it closely, simply as a matter of grammar and composition. I think it takes you in circles, and there's internal ambiguities. And I think that's not a good matter to be resolved in mandamus, but we'll more probably take it up after a full trial or development of the issues at an evidentiary hearing. Second of all, under that same section, when the statute refers to physical or natural or artificial conditions of the land, or buildings, structures, or personal property on the land, those are all, in my view, physical impositions on the land itself, things that could create a special danger or hazard. Those are all given immunity. But I don't know that having another person on the land who's the physical cause of the increased hazard is the same thing as the condition of the land.
But it says the landowner does not assume responsibility for any damage or injury to any other person or property caused by an act or omission of such person. So it clearly refers to activities of other people on the land, and says the landowner doesn't assume responsibility for that. It's not just talking about conditions. The other section does, but this one talks about activities or acts.
I understand your point, but I read it differently. I see how it can be read differently and just as logically by the rules of construction of the sentence, of English grammar. And again, I don't think this mandamus proceeding is the proper place to sort out the intent when it does lead to an ambiguity. I think the pleadings in the case indicate that Dr. Shaw and Defendant Hartnagle were social guests and social acquaintances of the Youngs. And again, it's a departure from the expectation that both parties and the trial court would have from the Lonergan case, and that it does use, as I said before, it does use the phrase that open the land to the public for use for recreational purposes. And that same language has been adopted by all three of the cases that have followed that without question. And I think if one of the goals of a legal system is to provide guidance to parties and to the lower courts in applying the law. There needs to be some clear statement upon which they can rely. And in this case, Judge Wood had only the benefit of Lonergan. In the two cases that followed it, Foster, not Foster, but the superseding Foster, there was no way that he could anticipate this court changing the apparent effect of Lonergan.
Whether someone was a member of the public was not an issue in that case, though, right? It was just that the court, when it was stating the rule, talked about the public as part of its statement of what the statute said. But that was not an issue that was litigated.
It was not an exact issue, I agree.
Okay.
There's no doubt that the unlikely bills are open to the public, just as the hiring range of Fort Leonard Wood was open to the public in the Wilson case, and just as the park in St. Louis County was open to the public in the Foster case. But nevertheless, we're still left with the language that has been adopted with apparent approval by the Court of Appeals and other decisions and by this court. And to change that, or to declare that's not what was really meant by the Lonergan case, should be open to a greater development of the facts and in consideration of the intent. I just submit to you that this is not proceeding to do that yet. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
To briefly address the appropriateness of mandamus argument, with all due respect to my very capable opposing counsel, I don't think that argument has any merit whatsoever. If I understand his argument, that he's arguing basically that just because there's not a plethora of case law on a given statute, that mandamus cannot be appropriate. And I do not believe that that is the standard for mandamus. Once again, I think that this court only needs to look to the statute itself, which this court and the Court of Appeals of this state have all said is clear and unambiguous on its face to determine that mandamus is the appropriate remedy in this case. On this issue of public, which again is not in the statute, is just the only place the word public appears is in the dicta of the Lonergan case when it was talking about the purpose of the statute, which again is to insulate landowners, is the only place that it used. We forget that this issue has been addressed with this statute in the Wilson case, Wilson versus U.S. Now that is a federal court case, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, but that very issue was raised in the Wilson case, which was an electrocution accident of a Boy Scout at Fort Leonard Wood. And the argument was that since Fort Leonard Wood only opened, and I think that isn't correct, because I think in Wilson, the Army only allowed access to the Army facilities at Fort Leonard Wood for organized youth groups, as which the Boy Scouts were one. And the argument was that therefore the Boy Scouts were not, you know, part of the public, and that was specifically rejected. And the court said that the plain language of the statute says any person or any person. So it clearly fell, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals clearly felt that this public argument did not have any merit. I'd also like to address very quickly just the effects and that argument that in order for this statute to apply, it has to be open to the general public. There is no question that if that was the meaning of this statute, it would completely defeat the purpose of the statute. If, as a landowner, I knew to get the benefits of this statute, the protection and immunity from liability, I had to let my property be open, carte blanche to everyone, what am I going to do? My guess is that if you ask landowners across the state what they would do, just about every one of them unilaterally would say, it isn't worth it. I don't want that many people coming through my land. And that not only is that my personal feelings, if we look to other states that specifically address this, there is a Nebraska case that we cite and go into in our briefs, the Holden case, which discusses this in detail and basically comes to the same conclusion that if the statute was meant to protect the entire public and require opening to the entire public, it would defeat the purpose of the statute altogether. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.